Joshua Stamber, Division Director for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture's Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division.
Josh, I would imagine that the Department of Ag has been mulling over whether or not to extend the June 20th cutoff date for dicamba applications because of the delays this spring. Ultimately, though, it sounds like MDA has decided you're going to stick with that June 20th date.
Yeah. You know, our growers in this state have really been facing herbicide and insecticide resistance issues that are just continuing to grow. Last year, we had the rollout of the dicamba tolerant technology that was really pretty rocky. We had over 250 complaints, and the estimate for the acres damaged is over $250,000. And really, we've never seen anything quite like this. And, you know, I talk to a lot of university faculty and extension specialists and crop consultants, and everybody else kind of said, you know, we've never seen anything like this either. So when we came up with developing these additional restrictions beyond the federal label was really based on the input that we got from the Soybean Growers Drift Task Force and the experts at the University of Minnesota Extension. And then we also reviewed a lot of the data that was collected during the 2017 crop year, and then came up with the maximum temperature restrictions and the cutoff date of June 20th.
I remember talking to Dave Fredrickson shortly after the state regulations were announced, and he kind of hinted at the idea that, you know, if there were circumstances that deemed it necessary, that they could move that date a little bit, that June 20th date. But I do want to come back to the decision by Dave and by the Department of Ag to leave that June 20th date in place. Have you heard from many growers or the commercial applicator industry about wanting to extend that deadline?
You know, we do hear from some growers in support of extending that date, but we also hear from growers that have also contacted us and said, they've been damaged, they've seen the damage, and they've asked us to also continue to maintain that date. I think one of the larger issues here is that, you know, while we recognize that these growers have invested financial resources and time resources into, you know, adopting specific technology, one of the broader issues that we've got to kind of realize with dicamba is that dicamba for use in dicamba tolerant crops as a post-emerge application is really most effective on small broadleaf weeds, less than 4 inches in height. As we start pushing into later applications, the only thing that's going to mean is that we're going to end up with bigger weeds and a greater likelihood of weed escapes. And when we think about the weeds that are especially hard to control, like giant ragweed or water hemp, you know, for water hemp specifically, you know, it's really only effective on very small water hemp. And if we get into a situation where we continue to use the product in such a manner that it encourages weed escapes, it's only going to exacerbate, you know, resistance issues. And so we're really kind of sensitive to that. Another component about why we want to see these used on, you know, when the plant or the soybean crop is still small in stature, in addition to the weeds, is that we know that when we double spray height, spray boom height from 18 inches to 36 inches, the potential for drift downwind increases by 350%. And, you know, as we start kind of thinking about how do we mitigate the potential for off-site movement of these herbicides, that's one of the things that we've also really got to consider. Another component that we were really looking at is that when we look at our 2017 data, you know, 75% of our dicamba damage complaints were applications that happened after the summer solstice. And, you know, those are just, you know, the old timers who have been using dicamba and corn for a long time, you know, will tell you, you know, it's not a good idea to use dicamba late in the season. You know, really, anytime after your got spiked corn, you can run into leaning issues and stuff like that. And so our concern is that, you know, if we're going to steward this technology for future years, we really need to have a successful year. And there's also the fact that there's still other good choices for post-emergent weed control for growers to utilize.
Josh, it's not fun to talk about, but what is the protocol if there is somebody that is applying a dicamba technology past the June 20th date, or if they're found doing that on a day where temperatures exceed that temperature threshold?
A lot of our pesticide complaint reporting is complaint based. You know, we have a relatively limited number of staff, and you know, for us, there really has to be a complaint filed for us to know about it. And then we would start an investigation, start going through the, there's a process. And if you, you know, visit the MDA website and Google pesticide complaints, there's a really pretty slick little brochure that kind of lays out the process that we go through. We do have our dicamba complaint form, is posted live on our website. And so that if a grower or if a homeowner was to have what they perceived to be dicamba damage, they could go in and fill out that complaint form. Conversely, if, you know, we recognize that a lot of the farm community may be reticent to kind of, you know, roll over on their neighbors. And we recognize that a lot of folks want to address, you know, if it's a across the fence type issue, you know, MDA's regulatory role within this is primarily to, you know, set up a case so that someone who had been drifted upon could pursue a civil case against that, against whoever drifted on them. So we're really trying to set it up so that, you know, folks can be made whole in these processes.
Anything else on the subject of dicamba and the state regulations that we haven't talked about that you think we should?
You know, we really think that dicamba is an important tool when it comes to combating herbicide-resistant weeds. And like I alluded to earlier, the continued registration of these products is really dependent on growers being able to use it with minimum impacts to their neighbors' homes, farms, and gardens. And a lot of this is just about making sure that, you know, in the agricultural community, folks are able to, you know, profitably and sustainably, you know, produce the crops and feed that supports the agricultural economy. And we really need to get a solid year under our belt of successful use of this technology before we can really come back around to talking about, okay, are there restrictions that we're going to loosen up or change? We need to have some successful use this year.